that.
All right, so we are now on item five.
And we're actually going to have video component. I find it's helpful
the big board.
For somebody to be able to look at something other than me when I talk. So. Play that one, baby.
Can we still look at you?
Yeah, it's at your discretion.
All right. This will come up in a moment, though. It's right here.
So, topic of the day is private markets.
I'm going to kill the lights.
And I assume this is going to come up in a moment here, but yeah. The reason we're talking about this is coming a continuation of the implementation of FFP. Ed talked about what we're doing on the liquidity side. We're in the process of drafting the policy statement right now, and the other big change that we're going to need to talk about is how we take down these large private markets allocations the board approved. There was about 12% allocation to private equity the board approved and about 16% to private credit. So we want to take the time to have a very thoughtful discussion today about what it takes to build that exposure and how we might approach this differently than what we have in the past. And really the timing of this discussion today is get the board's direction to get the tools in place so when the policy statement is done, when the liquidity search is done, we're ready to hit the ground running with starting to build out our larger private markets allocations.
Okay, I'd start with a question. There's that new bill that's going there where, you know, like hedge funds have to disclose all this new information.
Mm-hmm.
First question is it going to pass? And and if it does, how's that affecting our decision process today?
First of all, I don't know the chances of it passing.
Okay.
Secondly, if it passes, it will affect how we implement this, and it may put more emphasis on what we do through external parties rather than internal parties.
Okay.
I don't see it being a death knell to the program.
Okay.
I see a potential additional burden placed upon us from a reporting standpoint and potentially limiting the number of firms we can contract with. I won't know the true extent of that until the bill, when and if the bill passes, we'll take a look at that and say, how onerous is this from the general partner community and who will work with us and who will not? And we'd come back. And if we need to make a course correction, we'd come back with that information at that point in time.
Okay.
It's not going to negate the fact that we're going to have these exposures and we need the expertise. So really the objectives today are highlight the resources that we need to get in the room in order to build out these allocations here. When the asset allocation was approved in December, I told the board, there will be some implementation steps and we'll be coming back to you with guidance on what additional resources we need to be successful in implementing the asset allocation. And the goals I want to highlight today are really, let's make the program more tailored to Sisera and more cost effective, and we've got some ideas about how to do that. We'll get more direction hopefully at the end of this presentation. So the lens we're going to look at for how to make it more customized and more cost effective, we'll be taking a look at four different models here. The fund to funds model, which the board is familiar with, is how we've approached private equity for the better part of 20 years. Advisory and consultant-led implementation. These would be third-party advisors or specialty consultants who would help us tailor a program and help us source individual funds. And a staff-led implementation, which would be fully staff sourcing, vetting, and implementing individual funds. For various reasons, which I'll highlight, the middle two options are really our preferred approach at this point in time, but we'll step through why that is. So a quick reminder about what we're trying, why are we doing private equity, private credit in the first place? Why don't we just buy stocks and bonds and call it a day and go home? It would make my life a lot easier, it would make Ed's life a lot easier, it would make my staff's life a lot easier, it would make the trustees' lives a lot easier. Well, the reason we don't just do that is there's something unique in each one of these investments that's not available in the public markets. When we talk about buyout funds, we're saying we can go in and restructure a corporation to make it more profitable or allow it to be more financially healthy. When we're talking about real estate and infrastructure, we can actually develop a new asset that doesn't exist today. We can build it from the ground up. Venture capital, new industries, et cetera. These are things that are not available in the public markets. There's a reason we do them in private structure. So there's always something unique. Let's, just for a quick exercise, let's call it I. something unique, some unique investment. So how do we get that special eye? There's a lot that goes into this, because you don't have publicly traded securities where you can roll up to the bond market or stock market and purchase this instantaneously and have the SEC behind us and various regulatory agencies already setting the rules. We have to find these things in the first place. There's no centralized market. These are based on relationships. We have to conduct due diligence on the strategy. Does this make sense, what this firm is doing? Does this buyout fund make sense? Does this venture capital fund make sense? Then there's operational due diligence. Can they actually track our dollars, and do they have all the controls in place that are necessary? Legal negotiations, portfolio construction, monitoring. All of this is done on a customized basis. So, yes?
Is that a one-way street? I guess maybe I naively thought that some of these markets, these private markets, actually actively sought additional funding, from people like us that might have a large pool of money. I'm not sure who's chasing who, I guess. I always thought that they were as actively looking for more money as we are trying to find a place to park it.
I think there is a two-way street here, and a lot of times it's the people who are knocking on your door might not be the people you want to work with.
Right.
So there is a vetting process of, just because somebody's coming and asking for money doesn't mean they've got a great strategy. Sometimes you go out to them. And let's talk about this one. It looks a little bit busy, and it is a little bit busy. But there's a lot of stuff that goes into this. So from investment to Cicera, it goes through a general partner. You go through sourcing, finding the relationships, all your due diligence, your legal negotiations, putting it together into a portfolio that makes sense for Cicera, and ultimately getting back to our dollars. And the reason I had this slide up here is I just want to highlight where we are today and where we might go tomorrow. So if we think about fund of funds, they really capture this middle piece here. A fund of funds, from our perspective, it's a one-stop shop. They go out, they find the funds, they collect them into a consolidated fund, and it flows through to Cicera. The limitation on the fund of funds, apart from the fees, is the portfolio construction here is done on what's best for that fund of funds, not necessarily what's best for Cicera. They're building a collective fund. When and if that fits Cicera, great. When and if it doesn't fit Cicera's strategy, it's kind of tough luck. I mean, their fiduciary responsibility is to assemble a great fund, and hopefully that's good for Cicera. So when we talk about some of the consultant-led or advisory-led models, what we do is we pick up, they still do everything in the middle here. You still capture all that, but then they start to put together portfolio construction that's more tailored to Cicera's needs. And so it's just really, how can we get as close as possible, how can we get Cicera as close as possible to the investment and getting a lot of those great ideas flowing through on a cost-effective basis. So for the board today, really only two questions. Is that stock solution good enough? Is the fund-to-fund solution good enough and it gets you far enough, or do we want to go to a customized strategy? I would argue the new larger allocations are going to demand that we go to a customized strategy. And then if you agree with me on that, you go to the second question, you say, well, do you want to buy the solution off the shelf or buy the solution from somebody, from an external party to come in and help guide us to that customized outcome, or do we want to build that with staff? And I would argue we don't have the resources to build that with staff today. We need that to be an external solution.
How do you find the Sherpa? I'm trying to figure, I'm probably missing a fundamental step.
But how do we find the Sherpa?
Yeah, I mean, who's the Sherpa that takes you up the mountainside? I love these metaphors. Jerry just loves my metaphors.
Isn't Tim our Sherpa? I mean, I sort of thought that's why we hired Tim.
Oh, but you're talking about externally, either through Verus or otherwise, finding the path to the nuggets of value in the private market, right?
So right now, this is relatively simple for us because we primarily engage with fund of funds, and this all happens at the fund of funds level. They do the sourcing. They put together the funds into a diversified structure, and we just take down the entire thing.
Right, but you've got fees at every layer of that.
Fees at every layer of that. Right. So what we're saying is, can we parse apart that structure into something that works better for us? There are specialty consultants who all they do is private equity or private credit, design, sourcing, construction, separate accounts instead of fund of funds. Some fund of funds will actually say, we've got all the equipment to manufacture these solutions here. So if you just want the off-the-shelf solution, buy our fund of funds. But we can take the same process and create a separate account for you. So there are lots of entities out there, fund of funds, specialty consultants, advisors, who this is their business line. And we've talked with a number of them. The reason we're talking with the board now is we think there's a critical mass of folks who are willing to work with us on terms that make sense for Sisera. That do exist. We'd like to test the market with an RFP.
Okay.
So why am I going to harp on portfolio construction? This is where we get to something that's customized for Sisera. When we're approaching the levels of private market engagement that we currently envision of about 28% between private equity and private credit, we need to make sure this is dialed in. Gail mentioned having 24% in liquidity is huge. We need to make sure that's dialed in. Same goes here. We need to, for somebody on the other side of the table to understand our goals. What else is in our portfolio? It's no longer going to be enough to say, I can manufacture a best-in-class private equity fund for you. It's not enough for us anymore. They need to understand what is going on with our public markets exposure. They need to understand philosophically what we're trying to accomplish with the FFP portfolio construction process and be our implementation partners, not a third party to the process. And we really want to get to this idea that they work for Sisera. They're doing the best thing for Sisera, not the best thing for their fund. And that requires a different process.
Tim, do you have any sense of the cost, the fee differential between a set of fund of funds that we select at total 12%, somewhat like what we're doing now?
Sure.
And what it would cost to...
Right there.
Okay.
Sure. And let me just use this slide to kind of step into that. This is basically just saying, out of our CAFR, we spent $8.5 million on management fees for private equity last year. That doesn't capture the total cost of implementing this because it captures that top-level management fee. And so the fund-to-funds we have, we're capturing the pathway and the Adam Street and the Sigular Guff management fee, but we're not capturing the underlying fees here. That's a quirk of the accounting structure we have. But if we just scaled up to our new allocations, well, I can tell you if our fee structure remained the same but we got our dollars committed in private equity up, we'd be paying $12.3 million there. Private real estate is probably not a great example here, but the private credit, the top one, would be going from 1.6 because we have very little in private credit now to $15 million. So I can tell you that's what the current structure scaled up would be.
Okay.
The indicative pricing will come out in the RFPs. I will tell you it's down. It's less than this. So I don't want to just scale up and start paying $15 million in management fees to implement our private credit program, which will be a huge driver for overall results. I don't want to scale up our private equity fees by 50%. I do want to get our dollars allocated scaled up, but I think there's a more cost-effective way to do that. Generally speaking, fund-to-funds are considered the most expensive way of implementing. They're easy. They're one-stop shops. The board only has to make one decision every couple of years to allocate the funds, and then you've turned over the implementation to a third party. When you start to go to more customized strategies, the fees actually come down because the management fee is going to more of a flat advisory fee or generally a directionally, the closer we get to the general partner, the fewer middlemen involved, the lower the fees.
So there's no I would have thought it would be the other way, but there'd be economies of scale through the fund of funds.
Fund of funds don't tend to scale their fee structures. You pay per commitment, not on overall relationships. We've been able to tweak our fund-to-funds relationships to move the in terms of relationship pricing, but overall, most fund-to-funds don't do that. And that's why when I'm saying I want to issue the RFP to gather advice or gather some indicative pricing from folks who can help us on portfolio construction and design services, I'm more than happy to talk to a fund-of-funds. We simply don't want their fund-of-funds offering anymore. We want this to be on a customized basis.
Tim?
Yes.
It seems that one of the advantages the fund-of-funds have argued why we should go with them is because of sourcing. They have means to find the best deals out there. What's the trade-off for us here? I mean, would we be giving up some of that quality in sourcing? Would we run a higher risk?
So let me address that. And I'm jumping around here, but I think we're having a good discussion, so bear with me. Sourcing, you're right, Rusty, tends to be very strong on the fund of funds. Volume is their key advantage there. They see everything. They've been around longer. They've got the relationships. I think as we move from fund of funds to advisor to consultant to staff, clearly the volume of sourcing drops off. And it drops off considerably to the point where staffing we would be building not from scratch, but largely there. So I think we want to capture as much of this part of the sourcing model, but you do see some of the green boxes down here in terms of custom portfolio construction. And I think what I would really like to do is try to find the hybrid approach. Use the sourcing of a fund of funds or advisor consultant, and these lines do tend to blur. We've got bright lines here, they do tend to blur in practice. But get the portfolio construction being driven from staff level, saying, this is what we're accomplishing with our overall growth portfolio. Private credit, private equity plays a role in our overall growth portfolio, so we need to be giving you feedback about what we have elsewhere. So we're giving you feedback on strategy and portfolio construction design. We want to use your sourcing model. So the ideal here, somebody with broad sourcing that says, we've got a lot of deal flow. We understand what you are trying to accomplish. When the two meet, we bring that fund to you. That's really the holy grail here. So let me just step back to one slide back here because I think it is important. I'll skip my cell phone slide because it's a funny little analogy, but I think we can skip it. Who approves the commitments? This is a differentiating factor as well. When we go with a fund of funds, we make one commitment to the fund of funds, and they're given full discretion about how to allocate that to underlying funds. When we talk about some of these other strategies on the advisory or consultant side, they can do discretionary, they can do non-discretionary. So both models exist. I think given the goal that I would like to achieve here in terms of a dialed-in program for Sisera, my preference would be for a non-discretionary manager. So they don't have autonomy to go out there and just allocate to funds on their own. They have to have the conversation with us to say, we've got a great fund, we see your goal, we think they're coming together, and we say, yep, you're on the right track, or no, you're off, and you know something's not quite right here. But give that feedback, build that feedback loop in, and really have this be collaborative from staff to the outside party to make sure that Sisera's program goals are being met. That said, I'm open to using a discretionary tool when it's appropriate from, you know, and venture capital is notorious for being sticky about who they work with, so maybe we need a fund of funds just for venture capital, or there may be something we can't scale up readily, but overall, we would view this as being a non-discretionary, where Sisera would retain the power to approve each individual fund. It would be done in a streamlined fashion that may be what we've talked about philosophically with there being a dollar threshold where funds are approved at the CIO level, or there may be some other way of streamlining the process for board approval. But we want to make sure that there's this collaboration between staff and the outside advisor. And that would be, if the board is okay with issuing the RFP, that would be one of the absolute key requirements. Folks willing to collaborate with us on portfolio construction strategy.
Tim, can you talk for a little bit about that? Because in one of our first discussions on this topic, my concern was that someone who was willing to really work with Sisera would maybe be more of a second tier type of firm that, you know, we're going to be attracting folks that maybe aren't going to be, you know, at the level and quality that we would like. because they're willing to compromise and say, okay, what works better for you? And so can you talk a little bit about the landscape that we're talking about now? Because I think years ago, this wouldn't even really work for us. But I think now we're moving a little closer in that direction.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a great question because, as you say, times have changed. If we go back to the advent of our private equity experience in 1996 with Adam Street, then it was Brinson Partners, sourcing was difficult. You didn't know who to talk to. Vetting was difficult. And relationships ruled the day. And the differentiation between the best and worst funds is, you've always heard, if you're not going to be in the best funds, it's not worth doing private equity. Private credit's a little bit different. But it was, you needed somebody who already owned all those relationships, and the best people could command their own terms. The best firm can command their own terms. Over the ensuing 20 years, I think certainly some of the outsized returns associated with private equity have come down. They're still attractive, but they're not the 40% returns that we saw back in the late 90s. We have absolutely seen a lot more flexibility in what you would consider to be top firms willing to work with us. It's not as easy for them to raise money. The fund of funds are definitely losing market share, and they're trying to figure out, well, we've got all this, you know, R&D and manufacturing here, how do we monetize that? So you're starting to see the fund of funds be willing to go down the separate account side. They've already got the relationships, but they're willing to work with you on a more customized basis. I think also in the ensuing 20 years, you've seen the rise of the specialty consultant who said from day one, we're going to build these relationships, but basically, you know, bring our clients into these relationships. And they've established track records that we can now vet. So the firms that we'll be looking at here are going to have long-term track records. We can vet those, and we can vet it against our own track record, which I think is quite enviable in this space. And then you've seen, you know, general consultants start to say, well, you know, we've been doing this on a one-off basis for our clients. We've been finding them funds. Maybe that's a dedicated service. So there's a lot of players out there. And I've been, you know, the past couple of years, I've spent a lot of time talking with other funds, larger funds, about how they approach the space. Do they do this completely internally, completely externally? Have they found a hybrid that works for them? And so, you know, in conversations with funds like Texas Teachers and State of Wisconsin and Wyoming and Washington, I think what we're seeing is you can get to the customized solution on a cost-effective basis with top-tier management. And candidly, you know, the reason we want to issue an RFP, we want to test that thesis. If that thesis is wrong, we'll see in the RFP responses and we'll do a course correction. But, you know, we've had the conversations with the providers, with other funds, seen their experience. I think now is the time to test the pricing, and can we get better pricing on a more customized strategy while still maintaining access to the best funds?
Is there any talk of ever, when I first started, Sackers talked about partnering up with other pension plans to get more buying power. Something like this, do you ever foresee that making more attractive to these investors if we were partnered up with other pension plans?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an interesting thesis. Haven't largely seen it be borne out. I think the difficulty comes down to the lack of sameness among a lot of these funds. If I'm fundamentally telling you that I think we need a program dialed into Cicero-specific needs, Cicero-specific needs are not the same as San Bernardino's needs, not the same as Orange County's needs, not the same as Alameda County's needs. And so you start to lose some of that bargaining power of saying, for an advisor to come in here, or for a third party to come in and say, you know, we'll offer discount pricing. Well, why would they? If they're still have to design individual programs, you don't really have the buying power.
I was thinking just one investment, not multiple, but if there was a particular investment where we wanted to...
Well, and I think that comes in on the consultant and the advisory models of if they're vetting a fund and then they're showing that fund to a dozen clients, they're probably going to get better pricing up front because, you know, they're acting as that gatekeeper saying, if you come to me and if we approve your fund, I can put it in 12 different clients, so therefore it's a bigger pool of capital. Can we get some pricing power there?
And a few slides back, Tim had a few different blocks that talked about the process and, you know, due diligence, operational due diligence, legal, all of the, you know, there's a few boxes, but there's so much embedded in these boxes. especially when you look at what a specialty consultant offers versus a fund of funds. And actually, the model that I'm most familiar with is actually having a specialty consultant with an internal staff working together on it. So when I came, I had to get educated more on the fund of funds structure and the differences between that and having a spec. And since this is, I mean, we've talked a little bit in the past about specialty consultants with the board, but maybe if we could just take a step back and talk about kind of the real differences, the fundamental differences between a fund of funds and specialty consultants.
Sure.
That might be helpful.
Right. I mean, the fund of funds are fundamentally building a product set. They build a product and they shop that product to potential clients. The specialty consultants are sourcing, but they're not actually building a consolidated, diversified program. They're going out to their clients and saying, you know, it's that conversation of, we approve funds A, B, and C, and we take B and C to client X. And you start to get to that more customized portfolio construction and implementation process there. So it is more advisory. They're, you know, let us show you our best ideas, and we think a subset of our best ideas work for this. The fund of funds is manufacturing a product that is the approximately correct solution. They're doing what's best for that commingle fund, and everybody who's buying into that commingle fund basically has to say, I agree to abide by the guidelines of this commingle fund. They may be slightly different from mine, but it's a cost-effective solution for me at this point in time to gain exposure. The advisor, you know, doing the consultant role or the advisory role just starts to get it more dialed into the end client's needs and goals. So
the research capabilities of the specialty consultant differ than that of the fund of funds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you have broader exposure when you have the specialty consultants.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the differentiating factors on the sourcing here. The fund of funds is what they do all day long, every day, and they've probably been doing it for 20 years. They've got a lot. They've got a really robust pipeline of deals. You go to the advisor, I think you still have a very strong pipeline of deals. You go to some of the consultants, especially some of the general consultants who have split their private equity into a separate offering, their private equity consulting division into a separate offering. They're not going to have as robust, generally speaking, they're not going to have as robust of a pipeline of deals. So you start to get a drop off there. Doesn't mean it's worse. They might have access to a smaller but higher quality pipeline, but it is definitely going to be smaller in general. And that's why, you know, doing that cross section, I think, makes a lot of sense from my perspective here. What Gail talked about, the specialty consultant working with dedicated internal staff.
You know, to me, I like this approach. I just think the challenge is going to be in your RFP analysis is the pedigree of and the quality of that consultant, mm-hmm. given a backdrop of a quarter century of fund of funds being a place where there's a lot of returns, there's a lot of money, you have a lot of high flyers there.
Yeah. Right?
So I was thinking, I remember up until the Great Recession, I knew so many lawyers that were industrial residential development lawyers who within a year had rebranded themselves as sustainability lawyers, I'm sure. Because what had been was no longer working, and as things transitioned, and their jobs went poof in the night for 5-8 years,
yep.
Necessity is the mother of invention, right? So a lot of, you know, that's what I'm saying. The RFP process is going to have to really
cut through
that.
And you've hit on a key point here. This is going to have to be incredibly detailed. It will be a show us your activity year by year for the past quarter century.
Yeah.
What were you doing in 1993 versus 1994 versus 1995? And if your answer was, I didn't exist, boy, do you get marked down for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if the answer is, well, I was doing 2 deals a year in 2005, but then we acquired a group and we've really ramped it up, it's like, well, maybe, but you must have acquired a group that was absolutely phenomenal to overcome that. So, you know, a lot of this is going to have to be, you know, we kind of say we need to maintain at least the level of access to top tier names that we have today. We're not taking a step down from that. If you can maintain our level of access and get us the customization and you're willing to work with us, there's the holy grail. And as I say, if I'm completely wrong on my thesis here, it'll be borne out in the RFP process, and I'm more than happy to tell the board that I was wrong.
I was going to ask, are there firms that offer both funds of funds and advisory service?
Yes. And as I said, you know, that sharp demarcation doesn't exist in reality. I mean, the prime example would be Pathway didn't start off as a fund of funds. Pathway started off as an advisor. In fact, you'll, you know, the board members who have been on the board longer will remember that our first four commitments to Pathway were to a dedicated, call it a separate account. We actually did four tranches into Pathway Private Equity Fund 1. We had tranche A, B, C, and D that we did over the course of about 8 years. And I think you're seeing some of the larger fund of funds, as I say, you know, they're not getting the same level of commitments to their fund of funds, to their core offerings that they used to. They're looking at this and saying, well, can I take my funded funds research process and basically do customized portfolio construction? I want to see in the RFP process who's actually been successful at that, because that's very difficult to, you know, to create new business lines. But I think some of them have created a pretty decent mousetrap out there, and I want to see what the pricing is on that.
I think you've excuse me. I think you've really answered it. But what I'm thinking about is the presentations over my now 5 years on the board from fund to fund. Sales folks and managers that have made presentations to us, and the theme that comes at least to mind to me that they almost universally make is that this works because of our contacts. Mm-hmm. This works because of the relationships we have developed from the underlying groups that actually own the investments or have access to our being able to make investments in whatever our niche is of this. And when I go down your three columns, two columns, fund to funds and advisor, the first three, which I view as the really the key ones to identifying and finding those unique investments that we believe that we were getting in the funds of funds that we invested in, are the same. And I think to some degree you're saying they're close enough that you're comfortable with that. Is that a valid observation?
Yeah, I would argue that this, while strong, is weakening relative to history. These are growing relative to history. The sourcing, the idea that only the best fund of funds get the best general partners, while still largely accurate, the trend line is away from that. I mean, we take a look at, on an annual basis, what our fund of funds, Pathway and Adams Street largely, because they're larger fund of funds. Sigula Guff is somewhat more differentiated. But we take a look annually, what do they allocate to over the past year? And then, you know, just anecdotally, I go back through my email box. How many of those underlying funds did inbound inquiries to us? We're seeing the sourcing come all the way to us on an inbound basis today, where that never happened in the past. We're a better known investor, we're a larger investor, and the landscape has changed. The sourcing model is no longer the key differentiator. It is a big differentiator, but it is no longer the key differentiator. And I think the fact that we can see sourcing models that are viable outside of fund to fund, and they've always been viable, they've just been difficult to build, right? If you were a sovereign wealth fund and you decided you wanted to have a huge private equity allocation and you started to set up these relationships yourself, it can be done. It's just a huge undertaking. Today it's no longer as huge of an undertaking as it once was. But I still want that sourcing model to be external of our staff to get a broader collection. I want them working with us so they're sharing the information, so we're starting to build up staff level knowledge here. But that sourcing model still needs to be external. It's just a broader collection of firms that can do it today.
Two questions. One, is that consultant the same as our investment consultant? Is it different or could it be the same?
It could be the same. Some of the larger general consultants have specialty subdivisions that just do private equity, including Verus through an acquisition has this service now as well.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a reason we're not letting Verus do this search.
Right. Secondly, I think we're getting a lot of traction at Sackers and Calipers about the FFP has been the talk of everybody. Based on that, are you going to see a stronger participation, knowing that this may be the future of some of the public pension plans?
I think the bigger differentiator is going to be the fact that the board approved an asset allocation with a very large private markets commitment. It shows you know, a commitment from the board level that yes, they want to adopt a very large piece, a quarter, more than a quarter of the portfolio in private markets. That is a pretty big chip to put on the table, and it's going to attract attention. So we've jumped around a lot, but I think we're probably, the board would indulge me here, at the recommendation level, and then we can have a discussion about that. Recommendation I would give to the board would be, you know, I would ask for authorization to issue an RFP for managers that